Good afternoon and welcome back to our behavior sessions. Our next session number is 37413. And the title of the talk is The Puppy Intensive, presented by Dr. Suzanne Hetz.
Hello. Good afternoon. Are y'all full as ticks from lunch? This is the deadly lecture time after lunch when everybody kind of wants to go lay down and take a nap. So, well, the cold temperatures in this room may help, and we'll try to keep you awake with some fun puppy stuff. How many of you are doing puppy classes now in your practices? Okay, fair number of you. Have you been doing them for more than a year? Okay. Do you do 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 8 weeks, 6 weeks, 5 weeks? What else? Six. Between 5 and 6 weeks. Okay. How do those do for you in terms of consistent attendance? You have a lot of people make all 5 or 6 sessions, or do you have 1 or 2 that miss? How do they go? Rarely have anyone miss class. That's great. Good for you. What else? Everybody else about in the same boat? Attendance is pretty good? Okay. Well, that's a good deal. Well, then you may want to keep with your own schedule, or you may want to just consider what we're going to talk about here with the puppy intensive as an alternative, perhaps, for those folks that a 5 or 6 week class might not work for them, or just logistically to give you another option. I know in our neighborhood, we seem to have a fair number of people like flight attendants and pilots and people like that who just find it really difficult to make a regular scheduled class that way. So for people with erratic work schedules, a varying schedule might be helpful to them. For those of you that are already doing puppy classes, you know what the benefits of them are. And for those of you that don't do them, maybe a review of those benefits might convince you to take the plunge and begin to offer puppy classes in your practice. Obviously, one of the big ones is socialization. Not only to other puppies and to people, but also to your practice. When I first gave, back in 2002, I believe, Dan and I did 2 different weekend workshops on teaching veterinarians how to do puppy classes in their practices. We did them here in town where our business is. And then shortly thereafter, I gave a lecture on the same topic at Western States. And it motivated our own veterinarians here in town to begin offering puppy classes. And it went so well that initially they used them just as an incentive for their own clients. If you were a client of the clinic, you didn't have to pay for the puppy classes. But they started getting these word-of-mouth referrals where people were saying, oh, I heard you offer puppy classes. And so it not only became a way for them to attract new clients to their practice, they ended up going to a fee-based model because they were getting so many requests for puppy classes outside the clinic for people not clients of theirs. And we also have a person who now works for us. When we helped her start doing the puppy classes at the practice, they ended up leaving the practice, she and another technician, and opened their own training school and doggy daycare center. So, and the third practice that we're working with here in town, who you'll see some video of later on, they started, their model is a little bit different. It plays into our model, and I'll talk to you about that in a minute. But they started doing puppy classes one night a week, and now they're going to have to add a second night. I just talked to the owner of the practice here on Saturday, and they're doing so well, they're going to have to add a second night. So I think that there's a real need for puppy classes, and I don't think that there's as many trainers offering puppy classes as there is demand for puppy classes. So it's a real good opportunity for you all. It creates not only a stronger bond, I think, with the owner and the puppy, but also with your practice. And you can use puppy classes and the exercises that you offer in them to accustom puppies to handling and restraint. And as we had a big discussion about in several of our lectures today, that's a huge issue for many people. Through puppy classes, puppies can learn to associate your practice with good things, because at puppy classes, nothing bad ever happens. So when you have to have them in for vaccination appointments and other things later on in life that maybe not result in such pleasant circumstances, that can be offset a bit by the good experiences that they've had during puppy class. With our veterinarians, they swear that with the young adults and older dogs, they can tell which of those young adult dogs have been through their puppy class without looking at the record, because they say they're so much easier to handle because of their experiences during puppy class. And of course, just basic education of owners. There's so much that we need to educate owners about. We had a question about that last hour about, geez, there's all this stuff that we want our clients to know about medical issues, and now there's all these things that we want to teach them about behavior. How are we ever going to get all this information into their heads? And that's a challenge that we can perhaps talk about some alternatives for, kind of outside this discussion if you want to. But puppy class is certainly an opportunity to educate people about normal puppy behaviors, about how to deal with normal puppy issues, about giving them some realistic expectations for pet ownership and for puppies, and to really help people better understand what the behavioral needs of dogs are. And to my mind, some of the basic training, the teaching of the sit, down, come, all those kinds of things, while those are important and people really want their pets to learn manners as early as possible, from my perspective, this is much less important than some of this stuff, in my opinion. Some of you that already do puppy classes, what other benefits have you found that I didn't, I think I've got one more slide, that I haven't listed here? Any other additions to the good things they've done for your practice? Did I cover them all? She does spend a lot of time talking about potty training in puppy class, which makes sense. And she says that commonly in at least one puppy in the class, she'll pick up a urinary tract infection. So that would be another benefit, is to be able to identify medical issues earlier that you might not have picked up on. I can remember seeing a West Highland White Terrier puppy a number of years ago for a house training problem. This dog was probably 8 months old at the time. And they had done, you know, their basic house training procedures. Dog was still peeing in the house. They'd had the dog checked by their veterinarian, had a urinalysis done and everything. Nothing showed up. And I worked with them for probably a couple of weeks, and it wasn't getting any better. And as we began to really get more detail into what was going on, the frequency with which this dog was peeing just did not make sense. I mean, it was way too frequent for normal behavior. So we sent him back to the veterinarian again. On the second urinalysis, they picked up a UTI. So it didn't even show up the first time. So undetected medical problems are another benefit. Any other benefits that you all have found, those of you that run them? Okay. Well, we've probably then convinced you that there's a lot of benefits to you, to pet owners, and to puppies for conducting puppy classes in the practice, in addition to the ones that I've listed here. This isn't a lecture about how to do puppy classes or how to create the content or how to teach puppies. I'm going to touch on that a little bit later on in the hour. But just suffice it to say that if you're starting to implement puppy classes, you really need to have a lot of oversight initially with the people that are conducting them for you. A couple of years ago, there was one that hit, I can't remember how it hit my radar, whether somebody told me about it or I got copied the letter to the editor or somebody called me, I can't remember. But this was a technician who was running puppy classes in the basement of the clinic after hours. And the veterinarian had kind of turned her loose without a lot of oversight or making sure that she was properly trained or was giving information that the practice really wanted out there. And there was, I can't remember the breed of dog, it was might have been a little beagle puppy, who was really acting out, was quite upset, you know, just bouncing all over, not paying attention. And the technician picked the puppy up by his ears. I don't know if the puppy was, or if the technician was old enough to remember Lyndon Johnson and, you know, the president picking up his beagles by the ears years and years ago, if she was of that generation. Puppy started screaming. The owner started screaming. The technician says, "I'm not hurting him. If there's no blood, he's not being hurt." Well, you can imagine how that went down. There was a letter written to the local paper. The clinic got bad publicity, and it was just a nightmare situation for everybody concerned. So that's kind of your worst-case scenario that you really want to not allow to happen by proper oversight and training of the people initially who are going to be conducting the classes for you. And again, with puppy classes, this is not the old-school style of dog training where everybody, you know, marches around in a circle and it's more like a boot camp or a military drill. Years ago, people would say, oh, you can't even take and train puppies until they're 6 months old. And of course, the reason for that was because at that point in time, most trainers were using such harsh methods that they didn't think the puppies could physically tolerate them until they were 6 months of age. So we've moved way past that. But one of the ways to keep people coming back is that everybody's having a good time. I mean, those of you that conduct puppy classes, you know that there's nothing more fun than a puppy class. It's just a hoot to watch these guys learn and play with each other, and to watch the owner's eyes light up when they can get their puppy to sit pretty easily. They're just the most rewarding thing to do, which of course is another benefit of conducting them. As with anything, you need to have an implementation plan, and we're going to talk about implementation plans just briefly as we close out the session today. But let's talk a little bit about, I guess some of you may not have these logistic challenges, but when I was working at the Dumb Friends League, a large animal shelter here in town, and we were offering puppy classes, and also when I used to offer them privately myself, attendance did become an issue to some degree. Some classes had better attendance than others. When you're talking about doing a puppy class on a 4 to 7 week schedule, that's typically the numbers of weeks that most of them run, you really need to think about, gee, can both the staff and the clients be available consistently for 7 weeks? Is consistent attendance a problem? What about consistently having that space available for week after week after week? Depending on how your practice is structured, just your physical environment, that may or may not be an easy thing to do. The other thing about the 7 week schedule is just the timely delivery of the information, because invariably if you schedule your little discussion on destructive chewing for the third week, you'll have the person the first week who says, oh, we've got to deal with this chewing. It's the most biggest problem. And I can't, you're not going to talk about it till week three. I need something to do now. So just that timely delivery of information when they need it can sometimes be an issue. And of course, you have to take time before class or after class for the people that really need information that you weren't planning on discussing or lecturing on for several more weeks. So that can be an issue. The other thing when you do classes on this kind of a schedule is that really you may be starting them, say, every 2 months. And you have this window of opportunity with puppies that for some of them you might miss it, or you end up having 8-week-old puppies in the same class with 16-week-old puppies. And when you've got an 8-week-old Chihuahua and a 12-week-old Great Dane, the size difference is quite dramatic. And so when you do the puppy intensive, one of the other benefits is that you can get puppies closer to the same age because you can be doing them more frequently because it is a one-day class. What we're calling the puppy intensive then is just that, a one-day class, and the way that we've been working with it to implement with the clinic that we're working with is to do our one-day class, then with optional drop-in follow-up sessions that the technicians in the practice are offering on a rotating basis where people can drop in whenever they want to. And I know that drop-in sessions, I've talked to some other trainers here in town and they've had difficulty getting those to go, but I think it may be because they're not connected with a one-day class or with this rolling kind of content. So the advantages of doing a puppy intensive are just kind of the opposite of what I just mentioned with the logistic challenges of the sessions. Ease of scheduling. We offer a class at a couple of the local hospitals here in town on introducing to your dog to your new baby. And we've talked to the health educators there a lot about scheduling of that class, because in one of the hospitals on the south side of town that we do it at, we consistently get 20 to 25 people in that class every quarter. For one of the hospitals we do it up on the north side, we're lucky if we get six. And we can't really figure out what the differences are there. And in talking to one of the health educators, she says that for a lot of their educational programs for, you know, parents and for other sorts of health issues, they have changed from doing multiple sessions to putting it all in a one-time educational class, because they also had recognized that a lot of people were having trouble attending a 3 or 4 week session on stopping smoking or treating diabetes or weight management or whatever. And so it kind of mirrors the changes that we hear are happening in human medicine, where people are really asking for, let's do it all in one day, let's get it done, because I can't afford more, you know, 3 Saturdays to come and attend the class. We also already mentioned about the puppies being closer in age. That's another benefit. And when you have the puppies there for a day, it's more like kind of a day in the life of, and you might see behaviors over a period of time, like when the puppies may get tired or when you have a chance to do more things with them in a one-day session, that you might not see if you only have them there for an hour. So that's another potential benefit. This information dump can be a pro or a con, depending on how you look at it. Certainly in the puppy intensive, we want to get quite a bit of information out to people in one session. The advantage of that is that they have it all and that they can refer back to it when they need it, rather than, oh, I need to know about this issue, but they're not talking about that in puppy class until week 4. You know, what am I going to do in the meantime? The other thing about getting people all the information in one fell swoop like that is that I think you can sometimes prevent them from developing bad habits, because until you begin to impart more and more information as the weeks go on, they may choose to deal with certain issues or behaviors on their own using their own information that may not be the information that you want them to have. So you might be able to prevent some bad habits, some bad patterns from developing if they know from the beginning what not to do. Some potential disadvantages of the puppy intensive, as I've already kind of alluded to, I think for some people it could be overwhelming if the information isn't well managed, or if you don't try to help people process or digest this information in small pieces. The other disadvantage is that it doesn't provide the repeated socialization opportunities that a 5 or 6 week class provides, although we do get around that if we can meld it into the drop-in sessions. With our puppy intensives, the plan, we really want to have a relatively small class size, because as you'll see when I get to the syllabus, we really want to be able to do some puppy assessments, puppy evaluations, and really give people a lot more one-on-one time than we could give them in a larger class. Yes? We'll get to the drop-ins. They're coming up, I promise. Okay. So it may be that you need to charge more for the intensives, because with a smaller class size, you still need to have a certain revenue goal to make them cost-effective. But I think if they're marketed correctly, that's not going to necessarily be a big deal, because I think people are willing to pay for more one-on-one, face-to-face time with an expert. So let's kind of take a look at a potential syllabus for a puppy intensive. Have some time for just getting everybody in and settled, letting the puppies play a little bit with each other. And depending on the class, this can be flexible. These may not need to be offered in this order, but to just kind of give you a time frame. One of the reasons that you can start with an exercise like CUM is when the puppies first come in, they're still pretty excited and pretty curious and kind of rambunctious. So to try to do a stationary exercise like sit or down right off the bat is probably going to be problematic. So let them do a moving exercise, because they're still kind of in that arousal, excited, yahoo, what are we doing here kind of mode. So teaching a CUM behavior is a good one to start out with that. We would have socialization stations available that will be available throughout the day, and I'll talk a little bit more about socialization stations here in a little bit. But these are essentially interactions or objects or textures or sounds that we want to expose the puppies to that we know from experience they might be a little bit funny with. Vacuum cleaners, hair dryers, maybe a big wading pool with a little bit of water in it. Stairs, we have this little two-step, how would you describe that, step stool kind of thing that we've actually put in our house for our older cat, who's now having trouble jumping up onto a bar stool and onto the counter to get to his food. So we put this little two-step stool up there for him. That kind of a stool can be used to introduce puppies to stairs. That can be another kind of socialization station. Certainly, equipment in the veterinary clinic, the exam table, the scale, clippers, nail clippers, brushes, combs, teeth cleaning, stethoscope, thermometer, anything that you can think of that a puppy might not like too much could be a socialization station that once you tell participants what we want you to do at the socialization station, they can go back and revisit those throughout the day. Plenty of time for potty breaks throughout the day. I'm going to talk later on in the lecture about clicker training. I wouldn't say that that our classes and the ones we've helped this other clinic run at University Hills, I don't think that I would call them a clicker class, you know, like a hardcore clicker class, but we do use clickers at certain times in the puppy training. So we talk about crate training. And about this time, we might be ready for a little puppy nap. You know, they've been there for a couple of hours or probably getting a little tired. So now we can use what we talk about with crate training and practice that by letting puppies take naps in their crates, that we can either provide some extra crates or ask puppies, puppy owners to bring them. And then while the puppies are napping, we can get into some more meaty materials. I'll tell you what the five-step positive pro-action plan here is toward the end. So that with the puppies sleeping, or at least resting after they've been there for about an hour and a half, they're tired, people can concentrate a little bit more on what you're saying. Because you know that in your one-hour sessions, if the puppy is acting up and the person's trying to deal with the barking puppy, just the excited puppy, the trying to get out of the room puppy, they really can't concentrate as well on what you're saying as they can when the puppies are sleeping, tired. We can give them some information. After they wake up from their little nap, their little nappy poos, we'll give them time for another potty break and just introduce some basic behaviors like sit, down. Those two can be taught almost at the same time. Do you all know what puppy push-ups are? Where you lure the puppy into sit, then a down, a sit, then a down, puppy push-ups. And we teach a touch behavior for reasons that I'll talk to you about in a minute. And I won't say anything more about that right now because I'm going to talk about it when we talk about different ways of using positive reinforcement to elicit behavior. So I'll come back to what that means here in just a sec. So during lunch, then, we stagger the lunches a little bit. And we want to do that because we want to spend some one-on-one time, Dan and I, with each puppy and each owner or family. That's the other thing that I should say. We decided early on that if they have kids and they want to bring the kids, that's fine, but there has to be an adult for every child and each puppy. You know, having the mother with three kids and the puppies, and that's not going to fly. It's just, bad things happen. Like, I lose my temper. So we need an adult to supervise each child and the puppy. Okay. Anyway, during the behavior assessments, Dan and I want to spend some time with each puppy and their owner or their family, kind of going over what we've seen from their puppy so far in class, give them our behavior assessment quiz. I don't have a slide for that because we talked about it this morning. But if you go to our website, animalbehaviorassociates.com, on the home page, there'll be a link there on the left that says take dog behavior quiz and take cat behavior quiz. And you can print out those forms, download and print them out. And these are what we've come up with for what we feel should be behaviorally healthy characteristics. What every dog should be able to do if he's behaviorally healthy. Be friendly to people, adjust to change, not be overly afraid of noises, if he startles, to calm down quickly. Those kinds of behavioral descriptions. So you can use those forms or those little quizzes as a way of kind of focusing the conversation about the puppy's behavior. In between doing the lunch and the assessment, people can practice on socialization stations. And of course, this is our time as well to address specific concerns that they might have about their particular puppy. And for us to identify, if we can, any red flags or warning signs that we've seen from their puppy so far in class. Then in the afternoon, we want to talk about managing play times, because especially with families with kids, that becomes a big issue a lot of times with puppies. You know, they're jumping on the kids in the backyard or tugging at their clothes, or the kids aren't playing appropriately with the puppy. So that whole topic of managing play. As we talked about last hour, if any of you were here, teaching tug of war can actually be a really good way to teach a dog to give or to drop something. And so that's another technique or procedure that we use in class. And then we have some handling and grooming practice. Probably those of you that do puppy classes, you do the pass the puppy exercise. Everybody know what I'm talking about there? No? Pass the puppy? Okay, good. Then we have time for another potty break, some more puppy naps, and again, during the puppy naps, we can get into more meaty discussions about house training and talk to them about how to teach loose leash walking. We're not talking about a formal heel. We're just talking about getting the puppy to walk with you on a loose leash, and we want to introduce them to head collars, such as the gentle leader or the snoot loop at this point in time as well. What we haven't done, what I think I may do in the future, is to maybe even show some videos of what this looks like while the puppies are napping, so that they can get a really good sense of what we want them to start doing when we start practicing the leash walking later on. And then we finish with talking about nipping behaviors, introducing the gentle word, and talk to them about, well, what do you do from here? If we have any leftover questions and answers, and just generally a half hour to kind of wind things down. And of course, in between all of this, I want to point out that built into this whole syllabus are regular potty breaks, puppy naps, play with other puppies interspersed throughout this, the behavior assessments, and then the socialization stations as well. So it's not like we've got puppies and people just sitting in front of us as we're lecturing, because that's not the way that it would work. We want people to kind of be moving around and doing different things and then come together for these pieces of information that we impart to them. Yes? You'll see in the video here in just a minute. The question was, how much space are we using? And I have a little, about 2.5 minute video of some clips that I put together where you'll see it. It's not that big. Okay, so let me just say a few more words about the behavior assessments. Where we really want to look at the red flags, go over the behaviorally healthy characteristic questionnaire that they filled out, and set some realistic expectations. Because as Dan mentioned last hour, or whenever that was, this morning, as you all know, it's still surprising how many people think their puppies ought to be house trained by 10 weeks of age. Or, you know, you've got an 8-month-old Labrador and he's still chewing. He's an 8-month-old Labrador. So that realistic expectation stuff, I think, is huge. When I gave a lecture to a friend and colleague of mine, Dr. Marsha Heinke, she's a veterinarian in Ohio, also a practice management consultant. And she and her husband opened up a big doggy daycare center and boarding kennel about 2 years ago. And I went out and gave a lecture there, and one of the things that I said was, as a puppy owner, and Dan mentioned this morning, expect to lose something of value that you care about, whether it's financially valuable or whether it's sentimental value. I can't remember if it was Ashley or Coral. Tore up a picture that we had borrowed from my dad's cousin, so this is a man in his 80s, family picture that we had borrowed of my aunt. My aunt was in one of the first graduating classes for United Airlines to be a stewardess. That's when they called them stewardesses. You were talking back in the 1940s. And when back in those days, you had to be an RN to be a stewardess. And there's this picture of my aunt in her cap and her uniform, graduating from flight training school from United Airlines in 1940, Ashley ate it. Ate it. Coral the other day, I haven't even told you about this one. She got into this bedroom where I have my clothes and, you know, makeup mirror and all that. And I have a jewelry box that I had open on the side. It's a standing jewelry box. And in one side I have some real special pictures. one of our cats, the day that she was euthanized. And I have three other pictures of Jimmy Buffett. I'm a really big parrot head, big Jimmy Buffett fan. When I went to a book signing that he did years ago here in Denver when he wrote Who Shot Joe Merchant, or Where is Joe Merchant? And it's a picture of me like 3 feet away from Jimmy Buffett, and she got that picture out of that jewelry box, and she was chewing on it when I found her with it. Luckily, Jimmy's face is still intact, but all the edges around the picture are chewed off, and you know, the picture of my aunt and my picture of Jimmy Buffett, I was ready. Those were hard ones. But if you can relate those experiences to the people in your puppy class, that you know what it's like when they, you know, they tear up the $1,000 Oriental rug or whatever it is, because you've been there, if you can set that expectation for them. And what Marcia told me was, when she told that to a client, and the client came back like for the next puppy visit, and she goes, "Oh my God, Dr. Heinke, you were right. My puppy did such and such." And Marcia said that it made her look so credible, because she had predicted that this was going to happen, and sure enough, it did. So it's a really good way to really set yourself up as almost like you can see in the crystal ball. You know, you really know what you're talking about, because you predict that they're going to lose something of value, and they will. You know, that's what happens when you have puppies. Okay, I kind of got off track there. Socialization stations. This is from Coral's puppy class when she was a puppy at the daycare center, the Den, where we have our offices now. And what Joy and Christine did is they took Cheese Whiz and they rubbed it all around the vacuum cleaner. And first, they just moved the vacuum cleaner back and forth without it being on. And there was like this gaggle of puppies, you know, just noses down on the vacuum cleaner, licking off the Cheese Whiz. And then they turned it on and turned it off real quick, so that you get the puppies used to the vacuum in these little tiny steps, because the vacuum's covered with Cheese Whiz. There's nothing wrong about going up to the vacuum cleaner. This is a cool little thing here. So it's those kinds of socialization stations that we're talking about. Here's some other examples that I mentioned earlier. Any of you who do puppy classes and do socialization stations, what else do you have that I haven't mentioned?
Wheelchair?
Umbrella?
We actually have a small chair that when it falls over,
a little bit of a clatter when a chair falls over. That's a great idea.
Do you have a cat?
We don't have a cat. I can't remember, Christine. Did we do a cat in class? I don't think we did a cat. You really have to pick the right cat, because that could be real traumatic for a cat. But if managed right, it's a potential possibility. Dan, what else were you going to say? In the back? Canes and crutches and strollers and fake beards, people who look weird, yep. Or you can dress up, have it be Halloween day there at your practice. I think someone else mentioned to me that they were going to talk about potentially having staff members' children come in and help socialize the puppies. Certainly with the rest of the participants, there should be kids there as well. Some puppy agility equipment, that's another possibility for a socialization station. So let me talk now a little bit about how to integrate a potential one-day puppy intensive with the drop-in follow-up sessions. What the drop-in sessions are, they're essentially a puppy class, but on a rotating basis. So with each week, they have a different discussion topic, they work on different training exercise, they have a behavior discussion topic and a veterinary topic, and then I think they're rotating through about 6 weeks? 5 weeks. So each 5 weeks this schedule repeats itself, so that after people do the puppy intensive, or even if they don't, they can come in and do the 5 week class. So each week they focus on a different behavior, same ones that we covered in puppy class or in the puppy intensive. They have a socialization station, playtime each week, as well as the veterinary care topic. And again, they have the behavior discussion one each week as well. With both the intensive and the drop-in, it may be that problems are identified, not maybe medical problems as you mentioned, but also behavioral issues that need more one-on-one assistance. So at that point in time, you can schedule a phone consult with either the technician or the veterinarian, depending on who has the expertise and how you're going to set this up, or even refer to trainers in your community. One thing that you might want to do while you're at the exhibit hall is to visit two booths, actually. One is the Certification Council for Pet Dog Trainers, CCPDT, they changed their name. It's not Pet Dog Trainer anymore. It's Professional Dog Trainer. But they can talk to you about what that certification means, see if you have certified trainers in your area. Their website is ccpdt.org. So you can partner with a trainer if you don't want to offer these classes using your in-house staff. But first off, really have a plan here in terms of protocols for who's going to do what, who's going to be imparting information, when the veterinarian needs to see the puppy, and these kinds of follow-ups, individual phone consults, or even if you want in homes or have the, them bring the puppy back for a one-on-one, are all fee-based. These aren't for free. All right, let me just say a few words about a couple of things in terms of procedures. I'm not going to focus on that because of time. But obviously, you're going to need to have some sort of food reinforcer and using food to elicit good behaviors in class. And you probably can't see the cartoon, maybe the captions in the back, but it says aisle 5, table scraps. And here we have miscellaneous bones, chicken bones removed. Then we have who knows in the middle, kind of like mystery meat. And then we have gristle and fat over here. So when you're talking about using food rewards for puppies, they need to be highly palatable because the puppies may be anxious, they may be distracted, or both. They need to be soft and small so that the puppies can take them just one right after the other. These should be treats that the owner really controls the access to. At least in puppy class, maybe they don't get these really highly palatable, very desirable food treats anywhere except in puppy class. And if you make a little mixture of 3 or 4 different highly palatable treats, you might keep the puppy's interest a little bit longer. For the intensive, we'd probably recommend that they not feed the puppy in the morning and even bring some of his kibble to intersperse with some of these highly palatable treats, or maybe give a smaller morning portion and we'll kind of mix the kibble in with the rest of the treats throughout the day. And same thing if you're doing like a 5-week puppy class, you probably don't want your owners to feed the puppy before he comes to class. Same thing with toys. If the puppy has a to-die-for toy that he just is obsessed with, maybe during puppy class you really want to limit his access to it except when you're working with him and use the opportunity to play with that toy as a reinforcer. You might need to brainstorm a little bit for the puppies that may be too anxious for food. Maybe they don't really like to play. Maybe the opportunity to play with another puppy can be used as a reinforcement, or even if they want to be picked up by the owner. If they sit when they're told, a reinforcer can be, I get to be cuddled. Okay, in terms of some of the techniques that we use, again, just briefly, one technique is, how am I doing on time? 10 minutes? 15, okay, good. There's a number of different positive techniques that we can use to elicit behavior. The so-called lure reward method, it's using the food as a prompt to get the behavior and then using it as a reward after the puppy does it. So you can lure puppies into sits, downs, comes, standing positions, a variety of different typical behaviors that get taught in puppy classes can be taught using this method. Targeting, that's what I was talking about earlier when I was saying that we teach the word touch. You can use a target stick where there's a little bubble here on the end, a little foamy thing. And actually, I brought that click and, can you get me the clicker and the target stick? I think it's in my briefcase. Where you teach a puppy to either touch a target stick, or what we learned in our puppy class that I really like is I taught Coral to just touch the end of my fist. Because then I don't have to worry about having a target stick in hand. I can just curl my fist and I can tell her to touch. And I can lift it up, make her jump to touch. I can lure her into lying down by getting her to touch my fist if I bring it to the floor. It can be used, they use it targeting a lot to teach guide dogs and service dogs certain behaviors. You can use targeting to teach horses who are difficult to load to get into trailers. So targeting can be either just a fun thing to teach a dog to do, or it can be a really useful thing. For puppies that are a little bit fearful, you can teach them to touch a stick or to touch your hand, and if they're a little bit goosey about approaching people they don't know, you just take your fist over to the person and tell the puppy to touch. Puppy will come and touch your fist and he's approaching the person, but he might not even think about that because he's used to, boy, if I touch this hand, I'm going to get a really good treat, and that's pretty cool. Just to demonstrate some tools here, this is a really neat one that I hear is now hard to find. It's a target stick with a clicker built into the handle, so you don't have to have two different things. And then this is a modified clicker that gives a little bit softer sound than the typical square box type clickers that some puppies are afraid of. So this one's softer, and they also have a programmable one that will give you two different sounds from the same clicker. So we'll talk about clickers here in just a little bit more. If you want to start learning about clicker training, or you want to have a product to sell to your clients, that's a real good little booklet that Karen Pryor puts out called Clicker Training for Dogs. It's an introduction to clicker training. There's thousands, probably hundreds, of books written about clicker training, but this is just a real good introductory tool for you. I think I'm going to skip this slide. Well, one thing, just because it's a soapbox issue of mine, when you're starting to teach puppies or any dog words, we think of them as commands. You command him to sit. You tell him to sit. You tell him to lay down. And what novice people will do is they'll hold the treat out, trying to get the puppy into the sit, and they'll go sit, 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 and the puppy's jumping at their hand trying to get the treat and jumping on them. It's doing everything but sitting. That's not the time to add the word sit. You just simply lure the puppy into the behavior that you want, the sit or the down, and you don't start adding the word until you're pretty sure that when you hold out your treat, the puppy's going to sit. Because if you start saying sit, 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 and the puppy's doing everything but, then it's harder for the puppy to connect the word with the behavior that he's supposed to do. So what most people do is they add the word or the cue too soon. The other thing about this that I see on TV all the time that drives me nuts is when the dog sits and then they say, good sit. So I don't know exactly how this got started, but the sit tells the dog that if you do it, if you do this behavior, when you hear that word, then a treat is going to follow, or some sort of reinforcement. So once the dog is sitting, you then don't want to make the cue or the command part of the reinforcement. It makes no sense to the puppy. It confuses him. So good sit and good down and good come and all that kind of stuff, you just want to wipe that out of your memory banks if you're doing that now. The other thing that we teach pet owners, obviously, is to not use the old style stuff about stepping on his back feet, stepping on his paws to teach him not to jump up. We use negative punishment, which means taking something good away. If he jumps on you, you just turn your back on him or step away from him so that you withhold what he wants in response to undesirable behaviors. And we go over with people how to use negative punishment in a variety of situations rather than using punishment such as jerking on a collar or whatever the case might be. Okay, just briefly before I show you the little video clips, I want to just tell you what the five steps in our positive pro action plan are, because you'll see the technicians in the video talking about this. This is kind of our model, kind of our framework, I guess, for how we want people to be thinking about behaviors that they want to get from their puppy and also behaviors that they want to prevent. Because we find that if people kind of have a guideline of what to do when, then it helps them a lot more than them just thinking, oh, how can I get him to stop, or he's doing this, I don't like this, what do I do? We kind of have them think about these five pieces to getting the behavior that they want. First one, most important one, is help your puppy or catch your puppy doing something right. And you'll see how we make use of this in class here in the video. We also want them to manage the environment so that their puppy has fewer chances to make mistakes. That's a big part of house training. You know, don't let your puppy get out of your sight where he can go pee in the dining room when you're not watching him. So set up his environment so he doesn't have the chance to do it the wrong way, whatever it is. Meet the puppy's behavioral needs with play, social time, opportunities for elimination, mental stimulation, exercise, all kinds of good stuff. And use what we call, was a really negative punishment, but to the owners we call it, use the takeaway method to discourage unwanted behavior. And then to minimize discipline, which is really positive punishment, doing something unpleasant to the dog, to minimize that and use it correctly when necessary. And we go over some things about the proper use of punishment when you are going to use it. But we use the word discipline for the puppy owners. All right, I'm going to show you this little short video. The first little clip is just going to show you the space that we're talking about. Then I'm going to show you how the techs go about introducing the clicker, just introducing to the puppy that when you hear the click, it means you're going to get a treat. So this is not dependent on the puppy's behavior at all. It's just making that mental association, click means treat. And then what we do, what we've taught these guys to do is to start off just catching good behaviors. Because those of you that do puppy classes, you know when the puppies come in, they're just, they're all spazzing, and the owners are trying to get them to sit or lay down, and they're getting real frustrated with it because the puppies won't do it initially. And it just becomes kind of annoying and frustrating for everybody. So what we start having them use the clicker for is that the puppy is just standing there, just doing anything other than something they don't want him to do. If you're just standing there, click and treat him. Don't try to go through all this stuff to get him to sit and lay down initially, because it's too nerve-wracking for everybody. So if he's just standing there looking at you, you click and treat him. If he's standing there looking at another puppy, you click and treat him. If he's just walking around from one place to another, you click and treat him. And surprisingly, those of you that have done puppy classes will know this, when you start doing that, you just catch and reward these little, okay behaviors. The puppies start paying attention because they're like, how can I make you do that again? You got treats up there. And they really start settling down and really tuning into their owners. And it's a whole lot more of a passive approach than trying to get them to do watch me, watch me, watch me, all this kind of stuff. And the puppies aren't doing it and everybody gets frustrated. So you just catch them doing these benign behaviors. That's the word I was looking for. You reward them for it, and then you start getting the puppies to pay attention. Then I'm going to show you just a little brief bit of them luring to sit, and then a little sitter puppy who's related to our puppy who has trouble being lured into the sit the first week, but by the second week, he's got it down. Okay. Now, when I tried to load this into my PowerPoint program, it was crashing it, so I'm going to have to use the Windows player to show it to you. I forgot I wasn't going to have speakers here. That's just the space. As you can see, it's not that big. This is one of the techs talking about, and I'm sorry you can't. Can we make it?
First thing you want to do with them is just let them know that means treat. So,
just showing Reggie click means treat.
Good, Reggie. And if you can try to do it when he's not doing.
He's waiting until he's got kind of all 4 feet in the floor, at least isn't jumping until she completes it.
I know. If they're paying attention to you, you definitely want that.
When you see the black dog, he can't wait to get clicked and treated.
If they're sitting, you know it was clicker, and then you get on the dog. Because the clicker is going to be more
than and here she's talking about what the clicker means, and she can't come up with the word reinforcer. So we're there to kind of coach her. You know, that's okay. You know, people have a little rough spots when they're first starting out. That's all right. And now we're just walking around, kind of just catching dogs standing there, not really asking them to do a whole lot. And everybody's interested, see, and they click in the tree. What can I do to get one of those? Now we're doing a little bit of luring into the sit position. Treat. Now we're trying to lure Reggie, and Reggie just isn't having any of it. like, no, no, if I jump on it, I can get it. I don't want to bend those back legs any further than that. Not doing it. Not doing it. Not tonight. Not tonight. But by next week, watch Reggie give this beautiful little sit. And he's working on a stay with holding the treat a little bit longer, getting him to hold the stay or the sit for a little bit longer. And they came up with a little flip chart here that they use to go over. They're going to be teaching about how to get their dog, their puppy, to not jump on people at the door. To manage chaos at the door is their lecture topic for the evening. They're talking about being prepared, have your treats at the door, have a leash at the door, so you be proactive rather than having to go grab all this stuff once the doorbell rings. Okay, I've got, what, about 9 minutes? 2 minutes. All right, 2 minutes. Hang on. There's a number of implementation issues that you need to think about. We're not going to go over all of those, but just think about what resources are you going to need to start these classes, from staff to space to products. For example, we had extra paper towels that night. We had treats for everybody. We had clickers. You might need to have some extra crates. What kind of resources are you going to need? How are you going to advertise or market this in your practice? How are you going to let people know about it? Are you going to only do it for your practice, or are you going to open it up for the community at large? And as I mentioned earlier, one of the big issues is how are you going to get people trained to know how to do this? Because you don't want to have a disaster happen. You can think about partnering with a certified trainer in your area. Dan and I are probably gearing up within the next year to do some more of these weekend workshops, teaching people how to do puppy classes. We might even be able to offer them by webinars. R.K. Anderson, I know, does a lot with puppy classes, teaching people how to do that with the gentle leader system. So just make sure that you have staff, space, inventory, fees, all that stuff set up so that you know how this is going to work. Is that getting feedback? Sorry. And if we wrote out a little promo thing for the puppy intensive. If you want to come up and take a look at it after class, you're welcome to do that. And then we have our book, Raising a Behaviorally Healthy Puppy, which is one of, I don't know, probably 10 or 50 puppy books that are out there on the market that you can use as guidelines for your puppy classes, handouts for your puppy classes. So I think with that, I will stop and try to take a few questions before we're done. Yes? How do I recommend stopping undesirable behavior? You come in and your puppy's chewing on the favorite shoe. Well, if you're going to be reactive with it, if it's just a puppy, I would just take the shoe away and give him his own toy. If you want to be proactive with it, you know, we always talk about puppy-proofing the house. We talk about you can even set the puppy up with some bad-tasting stuff on shoes that you think he might get. And, of course, having lots of really good appropriate chew toys. And we like a lot of the ones that you can put food in, like the new Tug-a-Jugs, the Bouncy Bones, the Kong toys. Premier Pet Products and the Kong Company probably has together the vast majority of the food-filled toys on the market. So with puppies, I would just redirect the behavior if you come in and they're chewing on something that you don't want them to do, and then try to be more proactive about it the next time. Yes? Yeah, her comment was is that she's been doing puppy classes for about 8 years, and she's changed how she's done them over time. And now she does a two-and-a-half-hour session without puppies. And I think that's pretty standard for many people, where they do an initial information imparting session without puppies, where people can kind of focus on that. And then she does the other four sessions with puppies. And the one information session without puppies she'll offer at half price if people are just thinking about getting a puppy or they can't make the other four sessions with puppies. So certainly that information of imparting session is important. Yes? Her question is, do we find that if we're using a clicker in a class situation, does it confuse the other puppies because they're hearing clicks everywhere and they're not quite sure where to look? intuitively you would think that happens, but, and I would say maybe initially when the puppies hear the click, they're a little bit like this, but I think they learn really quickly that the treats only come from the owner. And I think they really need to hone in, or they really learn to hone in. And I don't know if they do that by discriminating the different nuances of the clickers that make different sounds, or exactly how they do it, but I think they do learn to focus on the click coming from their owner, however they do that. Yes? Certain age, or what puppies do we offer the classes to? Some people start puppy classes as early as 6 weeks. I think more commonly they start maybe at 7 weeks, all the way up to 12 or 16 weeks, depending on the age of the puppy. Well, if we're, yeah, I would say that we have different sessions for just like 12-week-olds and 7-week-old, but when you're doing the intensive, you can really just automatically kind of cluster puppies of similar ages more together, because you can do an intensive maybe 1 week for puppies 7-9 weeks of age, and 2 weeks later if you want, then you catch the older puppies. And it's certainly, as I said earlier, different having a 16-week-old Great Dane puppy and a 7-week-old Chihuahua puppy. So sometimes you go by size as well. Yes? Yeah, I didn't really put in a syllabus. Your question was about puppy play, but I did mention some important things that we do throughout the day, which was naps, potty breaks, play, and socialization. Yes. Other questions or any comments that anybody else wants to add? The question was, have we done this in indoor and outdoor sessions, and what are the complications? We have not done it with indoor sessions. We've used the space here that I showed you. Outdoor sessions are certainly possible, and for some people, they're the only choice because they don't have an indoor training facility. I would say with outdoor sessions, I think the puppies are more easily distractible. I know if I had to do Coral as a 7-week-old puppy in an outside session, she would be looking at the trees for birds, and that'd be the end of it. But so I think they're a bit more of a challenge, and of course you have to have a secure area, because sometimes puppies pull leashes out of people's hands and things like that. Anybody else done outdoor sessions? You don't do any of that sessions in the outdoor training, the outdoor play areas, do you? At the den, you didn't do any? Yeah, they do all the puppy classes inside. Probably time for one more question. Okay? Well, thank you very much. We'll be around if you have questions in between time.